Hi, I'm Ethan Helfand, and you're listening to Drinking and Droshing, Torah with a Twist, and I'm really frustrated that Gabe is not here, but on a train instead.
Hello, folks, and happy 5783. By the time you hear this, I will be slightly older, not say 120 years old, but certainly 36 years old, which is double high, which means that I am twice as much full of life as I was before this new year came into play. I'm really excited for this particular episode, which just happens to be with somebody who's known me for, well, I guess just a single high, like a half of my life, which is a little crazy when you think about it, but it's very exciting. I can't wait for you to meet him, and so we're going to get started right now. So I get that there's some confusion because it seems like we're heading towards the end of a story and an end of a book, except wait a minute, we just started a new year and I'm so excited because it's 5783 and this is our first episode of that new year. So Shana Tova to everybody listening. We're not entirely sure at what point of the week that this will come out, but we hope that you had some apples and honey or challah and honey, or if honey is not your thing or your younger than a year old, we hope that you had something sweet that you enjoyed because, you know, we really want for you to have a Rosh Hashanah Metukah, a sweet new year, and just to have an incredible, incredible day and week. I am so thrilled because, you know, they say that when you get to hang out with people that you've known for, oh, way too long at this point, as I think about the timing, generally that it should be a sweet reunion, and it is for me and for our special guests today. So it is my pleasure and privilege, and honestly, it brings a bright smile to my face to welcome my friend and also college acquaintance friend, pal, also GW graduate, Ethan Helfand, to Drinking and Droshing. Born and raised in Kansas City, Ethan Helfand now serves as the Director of Jewish Experiences, a collaboration of Jewish Federation of Greater Kansas City, and the J, the Jewish Community Center of Greater Kansas City. That means he's got two bosses. Helfand, who holds degrees in Jewish Studies from Brandeis and the George Washington University, and as I said before, we went when it was the most expensive school in the country, has focused his career on Jewish community programming and organizational and leadership development. Most recently, he served as the Associate Director for Programs and Leadership at Jewish Life at Duke, Hillel at Duke University, and previously as the Regional Teen Engagement Director for the EMSA region of USY, the youth branch of the conservative movement. Ethan is also a lifelong camp person at heart, which is going to make Edan very excited, having spent summers at Camp Sabra as a child and more recently as a senior staff member and visiting staff member at Herzl Camp in Webster, Wisconsin. In his spare time, Ethan is an avid reader, a huge fan of The West Wing, see Gabe, you're missing out, the KC Royals, KC Chiefs, and the University of Kansas Jayhawks, an above average cook and a below average athlete. Ethan, don't talk mean about my friends like that. It is such a pleasure to welcome you to the show. Ethan, welcome to Drinking and Droshing, Torah with a Twist.
I'm so excited to be here, Amanda. And as long as I've known you, it is really important that I re-emphasize your point. The George Washington University, the most expensive school in the country. And we both own the same yellow towel.
That's true, as does everybody else. And for people listening at home, I do want to actually say we also received a medal for graduating. This is a very true thing. They gave us a literal medal for graduating college. So if you go to GWU, you might too also get a medal when you graduate. But my favorite trophy, not really a trophy, but like really a gold medal participant of this podcasting partnership, Edan Waldman, our executive producer, is back with us today. We're so excited to have him. Welcome back, Edan. How's it going?
It's going great. This is a good way to close out my day.
Yeah, and enter your new year, right?
Yeah, new year, probably going to be the same me, but I'm going to try to make some changes if I can. We'll see what happens. Report back. We'll report back in a few months.
I'm loving the mindset, loving the optimism, and I believe that it will be an auspicious time. I actually am so excited for this new year to happen, and I'll share why in a little bit, but it might have to do with something about the birthday of the world and my birthday being at the same time. Having said all of this, we have a podcast episode to get out, so let's get started. For the second week in a row, Gabe isn't able to be here, which is okay because he was on a train, and when we were recording this, he was doing something really important and he misses us. But just because he's not physically here doesn't mean that he isn't here in spirit, because he did give us some gifts for the new year. But something kind of strange has been going on. Idan, our executive producer, constantly said, like, you know, like, hey, like, I'm good doing as little as possible on the podcast itself. Like, I don't always need to talk. But all of a sudden, Idan seems to be willing to just step outside his comfort zone. Maybe that's a New Year's resolution. And he was like, I can totally cover Gabe's things this week. Don't worry about it, Gabe. I've got you. And I honestly believe, Idan, Gabe is going to be so proud to hear the way that you deliver this rundown today.
Yeah, we'll see if I'm also impressed. And we'll see how much of what I read is absorbed by me, because I have not rehearsed this. And, you know, Gabe spends a lot of time before we start recording every episode just on mute in the Zoom call while I and Amanda talk our guests through stuff. And you will see him on mute just kind of rehearsing it. I am really bad at just practice and rehearsal and stuff like that. It's hard to get myself to do it. So I'm just going to wing this and we will see what happens. Moses is 120 years old, and that's pretty old. His age, along with the whole thing about not being able to enter the promised land, makes finding a successor pretty important. So who will that successor be? Joshua, son of Nun, from the tribe of Ephraim. Mazal tov, Josh. Also, Moses writes down the teachings and gives it to the priests. Let me say that again. He's writing the Torah while we're still in the Torah. Whoa. God ominously says to Moses, the time for you to die is drawing near. Creepy, but a gentle touch was never really God's style. So, with Moses' impending death, it's time for Joshua to learn about being the leader. So he and Moses go into the tent of meeting for a chat with God. Should we say a meeting? Was it a happy chat? Nope. God tells Moses that after he dies, the Israelites will turn away from God and practice idolatry and break the covenant. I'm sure Joshua was feeling super comfortable about this. Regardless, the Israelites will do bad things, God will get angry, bad stuff will happen. You know the drill by now. Suffice to say, it won't be pretty. God even has Moses write down his whole speech like one of those magicians with a sealed envelope so that the people will know that God was right all along. Moses tells the priests to put the teaching next to the ark and carry it with them. He chastises them for being stiff-necked and defiant, turning away from God even before Moses' death. Note, don't do that. You will, but don't. Lastly, we get a preview of next week's Parsha. Oh boy, a poem. I hope it will be happier than this week's poem. And that's Parshat Vayelech.
That was like the full range of emotions in a very short period of time. But my favorite part was when Idan gave the most lukewarm rabbi congratulations mazel tov to Joshua.
Mazal tov, Josh.
Mazal tov, Josh.
I think the thing that threw me off is that you know, it's Joshua, and I meant, like, my brain just reading things on the fly was thrown off by the fact that it was written Josh and not Joshua, which is funny, but my brain was just not ready for it.
Do you think it was that thing where, like, in public it was Joshua, but in private it was like Joshy or something?
Yeah.
And like, as he got to a certain age, it just got to a point where, like, Joshua was just like, listen, Moses, it's got to be Joshua. Joshy is not going to fly anymore.
And Moses is just like, sure, whatever you say, Josh.
I'm 120 years old. What do you expect?
This old of a dog is not going to learn really new tricks.
Then wouldn't it be like Joshua?
Joshush.
Idan, incredible job. We are so proud of your delivery and, you know, your ad-libbing on the spot. And as Ethan said, like, you certainly could do the bar mitzvah speech from now on and just be like, mazal tov, mazal tov, mazels.
Mazal. Mezcal tov.
I know your mother named you Joshua, but can I call you Josh?
I feel like we're close enough now that I can just call you Josh, yeah? Yeah.
Ethan, a lot of people, when they're trying to wish you good health, say ad mea vizrim, that you should live until you're 120. And that's a very long time. And I'm going to say by the time this episode gets out, I will have turned 36, which is double high, which is very, very exciting. And for our audience to know, that means I have known you slightly more than half my life, because I went to GW when I was 17 and turned 18 on September 25th. For those that are interested, I do accept, you know, support for the podcast for a birthday present, even belated birthday present. Don't worry about it. You're welcome, Gabe. And I have to tell you, it seems like a lifetime, like a very long time, to be 120 years old and maybe not to hit that finish line that you always dreamt of. And you have so much work with people who are always kind of hitting their finish lines and going to the next thing. You've worked with youth that are hitting their finish line and then going to college. You've worked with Hillel who are hitting their finish lines and maybe going off to internships or to jobs. You know, now you're working in Kansas, working with the Jewish community, all of whom might be facing major transitions. And that could be a really rewarding time and also a really scary time. And so I want to know, like, what inspires you to do so much work with all of these people who are constantly going through transitions and hitting these finish lines?
Yeah, I think that's a really beautiful way of saying it. When I was reading the Parsha, I was thinking about this idea of that it opens with the idea that Moses is, it has to start with Moses is old, because we always have to be reminded of somebody's age. And it reminded me of, actually, I'm going to like harken back to a different point in my life when I used to work in the restaurant industry. There's a game that chefs love to play where they talk about, like, what would your last meal be? And I kind of like to think of this Parsha through this these lens of, like, Moses, like, on a micro level, like, what would your last meal be? But on a macro level of, like, how do you make sense of everything that's happened and also what's next? And there's my requisite West Wing, you know, remark that I was having to work in here somewhere. I think the reason it's so important to me to work with people in that way is because for me, that's the essence of what leadership is that it's thinking about what's next. It's thinking about how we leave legacy behind in kind of a really humble way, which I think there's a discussion to be had about if that's how Moses left his legacy in a humble way, especially because he like got up on a soapbox and delivered a poem for his last one, which somebody else will talk about next episode. But also because you have to have trust in what is coming next, both in the people and also in like your next step of your journey. So I think it's a really interesting framing to think about how life works. And for me, I've always gotten a tremendous amount of found a tremendous amount of meaning and passion in having those conversations with folks and helping them to understand, especially as we think about community leadership and, you know, what we do, is that we're always preparing something and working on something that we're really not always going to be able to take advantage of or not always going to get to experience. And how beautiful of a Torah is that to create? Like, our Torah is preparing things for other people to get the benefit of. And then continuing to do it and perpetuating that cycle in like the best and most healthy way that you can perpetuate a cycle.
So I love this idea of doing it in a healthy and warm and comfortable way. And I find that really beautiful. And in our Torah portion as well, like when we look at Deuteronomy 31, there's a really interesting thing where God basically says to Moses that you're supposed to be able to speak to the Israelites and say to them, Hizku ve'imsu, to be strong and resolute, to the Israelite people, that like this big change is coming and you need to be able to feel strong and just kind of brave and ready. And what's really fascinating is in this handoff of leadership, Moses actually doesn't say it to the Israelite people at first. He says it to Joshua. He goes to Joshua. And the first thing he says to him, not to the people Israel, but the first thing he says to him in front of all of the Israelites is Chazak ve'ematz, right? That Joshua needs to be strong and brave or resolute or just courageous. And I think that's really hard in the face of a big change. And, you know, I know leaders need to lead by example, but you do a lot of leading, and how do you find the ability to be strong and resolute? Why do you think that leaders need to do that for the people who follow them?
So I like to think about leadership in a variety of different ways. And part of it is I think the best leaders are the people that also have surrounded themselves with the best leaders and mentors of the past, who can kind of pass along, like, transmission of information, transmission of story, transmission of tradition, and can give you as much information from which you can then start to make your own decisions is really important. And at the same time, I think it's really important to recognize that leadership and transition and taking on something new can be scary, right? We're coming up on Rosh Hashanah, or this will be on Rosh Hashanah when people are going to be listening to it. And we're starting this process of that we started at the beginning of Elul, of examining ourselves and our actions over the past year in the process of tshuva, and getting to a place where we're starting to think about what's next, but also knowing that what's next is unknown, right? We don't know what's coming, but we have to prepare for it in some way and go into it with a little bit of trepidation, but also with the excitement of the possibility of what's to come. So I talk about leadership. I used to talk about leadership with students. I'd give them all rubber ducks, and they'd always be like, why rubber ducks? And I now have a great rubber duck collection from students that have given me over the years. But I'd say, what does a duck look like when they're swimming on the water? And they look calm, and they look confident, and they know what they're doing. And what's happening underwater is that they're paddling for life, right? You're paddling just to stay afloat. I think that's kind of what Joshua is doing here. And that nudge from Moshe and that nudge from Moses in a public way is that vote of confidence to, like, push a person off and say, you're going to struggle. This is going to be hard. The portion, as Idan so beautifully told us earlier, really, like, sticks with this, you know, straight up saying everything's going to go wrong, which you don't usually get that kind of warning to be like, everything's going to go wrong. But with or without that information, you're still stepping off into the unknown. And I think our responsibility as community leaders is to help prepare people for what that unknown could look like and how to think through it and how to ask the right questions and how to surround yourself with the right people. And it's kind of interesting because Moses, as like this pinnacle of leadership in kind of the Jewish faith, is a person who so frequently did the wrong thing. And I think that like this point where Moses is handing it off to them, and Moses isn't bringing up the fact that he often screwed up, but he's doing it like with a confidence of like, you got this. And I appreciate that a lot.
So I love this because my personal foundation is teaching leadership through a Jewish lens, which is something I've been doing for a long time. And I know for you that that's something that is really important to you, especially because you love doing leadership development and organizational design. And that means that we have to think about these big questions, right, about managing change. And I do feel like Vayelech is a big step to this idea of like, we have a big change that we're going to need to manage. And I'm curious where you see the motivation for that change coming for our Israelite community in this portion, or where you might see some of the motivation for that, you know, coming to the Jewish people of today.
So the motivation, I think motivation changes. One thing I talk a lot about in the work that I do currently and the work I've done in the past is that we have to know what people are wanting, right? So if we use the kind of the idea of human-centered design and this idea that we want to understand what people are wanting to get out of their experiences, and I think now more than any time in our history as a Jewish people, we really are understanding that people are looking to find meaning and understanding through different mediums. And also, especially coming out of a pandemic, maybe coming out of a pandemic, maybe not coming out of a pandemic, people are thinking about how they approach their involvement in different ways. And so we have to spend the time as leaders to understand what their motivation is. We have to ask the questions. We have to spend the time amongst the people in our community to understand. In addition to that, I think it's really important to look at this story and this transition of Joshua becoming the leaders is like a, we're told that things are going to go wrong. And so you can kind of prepare yourself for that. But managing the expectations of the people is still going to be hard. Even if you know the outcome, you still know that every step along the way, you're going to be challenged in how people react. And I think the motivation of Moses to pick Joshua, or for Joshua to be the next leader, and then the way that transition happens kind of subtly. It's not like how we usually inaugurate leaders in the modern day world, right? There's not like some big ceremony where somebody lights a candle and then somebody blows out the other person's candle like we all did in youth groups, which is kind of a touching thing. This is like a much more humble, simple way of being like, go. And to me, that's also like the, we can't stop. We can't stop. We have to keep moving. And if we don't keep moving, somebody else is going to keep moving in a direction that we don't have control over, and regaining control becomes even more difficult. So the motivation as a leader is to keep up and to understand that you are the pivotal person that drives the process.
I love this idea of leaders being able to move people. I know that's something that they talk with us about in rabbinical school as well. And one of the things that I love is when, you know, this week's portion connects to last week's portion. And so in Nitzavim, we had everyone at Sinai was supposed to be a part of this covenant, whether they were there or they weren't there. You know, it was the women and the children and, like, you know, the wood choppers and the water drawers. I like to think that the water drawers were there as like kind of like a hat tip to Moses, because, you know, Moses means drawn from the water. And I think that that's kind of a cool connection. But here too, in Vayelech, we have this really important thing that at Sukkot, which P.S. is going to come up in a couple of weeks when you hear this episode, that we're supposed to read and really like refocus on this teaching again. And again, everyone's supposed to be there. You know, and it's not just for men that we're supposed to be there, but we have Hachil et Ha'am, Ha'anashim, the Hanashim, the Hataf, the Gerecha. This idea of gathering everybody, men, women, children, people, all the humans, get them. And not only that, but also like their children, Uvenehem, Asher Lo Yadu, Vishma'u, Vilimdu, that they haven't been able to hear or know or learn what this is happening yet, that everybody should have at least the opportunity to come into contact with this type of learning. And so, because you have such an interesting job that's outreaching to people who aren't necessarily members of a synagogue or, you know, this big Jewish community, I think it's kind of a cool thing that you get to invite them in somehow to, I don't know, say, make Judaism tangible in their own terms and their own time, something that this podcast really can get behind.
Yeah, I really want to pick on the word that you used a few times there, which is invitation. I think one of the things that the framing that you just provided does so beautifully is that it encourages the fact that this is an invitation to everyone, right? We get to choose what and how we are a part of a community. And I work in a community that I grew up in and have come to understand so deeply. We're not the biggest community in the world. There's about 23,000 Jews here in the Kansas City metro area. People get to choose to be a part of the community. But on the other side of the flip side of it is that our leaders have to create invitations for people to find their way in. It's there and it's going to be there, but we have to find ways that people feel are approachable, which is really something I get to think about every single day, is how do I go to people and honestly say, look, I work for the two largest Jewish organizations in the city, but I get to say to them, by the way, correct something earlier, I actually technically only have one boss, but sometimes it feels, as all Jewish community professionals do, that I have multiple bosses, but I have one really lovely boss. I'm going to send this to her to listen to. That we get to say to people in an honest and open way, I don't care if a synagogue is how you find connection. I don't care if giving money is how you find connection or giving time is how you find connection. And I'm open to the possibility that none of those are things that draw you in. And that's okay. So I used to talk with my students, and I still use this metaphor all of the time, that being a member of a Jewish community is not like riding a roller coaster, right? When you ride a roller coaster, you have to be yay high, yay tall to ride the roller coaster. Being involved in a Jewish community does not require you to be yay Jewish, right? There isn't a quantifying way to say you have a way into the community. And when we lead with that, people feel more open and welcoming in the way that we all claim that we always are, right? Every organization that I've ever worked for and every organization that exists in the world says, we're open and welcoming and inclusive. But if we actually think about if we are, especially when you're doing work on a community scale, we actually have to evaluate those claims and think about what that actually means. And we tend to put up those barriers, like the barriers to entry are high. And when we think about how we genuinely knock them down, that's a form of an invitation to everybody, to the people who are here, the people who have come in the past, and the people who are going to come in the future. It lowers the barrier to entry for everybody. Because when you come in, then you bring your stories of the past and it helps us to learn where we've come from and who we are. And when we lower the barrier to entry, we give the opportunity to people who we don't even know yet, who aren't even part of our communities yet. There's just so many thoughtful ways for us to do this. And that language around invitation is really good. We can put out the invitation. We don't necessarily know people are going to take it. But if they don't, and it's possible they might not, we're still here. And when they decide, if they decide that they want to come in, we're still going to be here. we're not going to go anywhere. And that's what leadership is. It's kind of that persistence of being there and being ready to do good things to help other people. I have like a giant sign in my office and I have one in my home that literally just says, do good things, right? I literally have it in front of my desk every single day and look at it as a reminder that like when I leave my office or when I'm sitting on a Zoom call or on the phone with somebody, that like that's how I lead. Because if I do that, I am continually creating an invitation for people to get involved in a way that's meaningful for them.
Do good things. I love that. It's easy. You know, last week we were talking about just do the thing at all, that you're giving us a direction. You're saying do good things. Here's where that gets tricky with this week's portion. I get that it's only a chapter long, but it's got a lot of attitude for something that's super short. And so here I have to wonder, is Vayelech like the origin of the self-fulfilling prophecy? Right, you know, that Moses was a prophet and puts out there, I know when I'm dead, y'all are going to do bad things. You're not going to do good things. I'm telling you to do good things, but I know that you're going to do bad things. And that's not necessarily the leadership that I would normally get behind. Like, that's not my leadership style. But I'm curious what you have to say about it, because I think it's really interesting.
Well, and I want to double down on like the meta part of this portion, because there's this idea that like Moses is doing all this and then God says, go write all this down and have it follow the Jews along wherever they go. So they're constantly going to be reminded by it too. As we read this portion every year, and this isn't the only time in the Torah, it happens all the time. We're constantly being reminded of being like, you're going to be horrible or you've been horrible. How is that set an example? I think it is troubling. It really is something that feels unresolved. And it always has kind of felt, I mean, I know in Hazinu next week, Moses gets a chance to do some of those lifelong big lessons in peoplehood and thinking about how we come together and how we remember our history and think about that as we move forward. It's kind of one of those soapbox, like, here's all the Jewish values and like, they're here. Don't forget that they're here. I guess the thing I find, not comforting, but I guess the resolution I find in thinking about the question you're asking is, I know that there are people like Joshua, Mazel Tov Joshua, you now have the opportunity to like try and do the thing and you know what's coming and you're still going to try and not go that direction, right? I want to bring up like just quickly, like a common thing we talk about this. We're in this place in the world where like we think about climate change, which is not something I'm super educated about, but I know when I hear about it and talk about it with people that it doesn't seem like we're getting any like in a better place. And yet every day there are people who are going out and dedicating all of the work they're doing to try and put us in a better place, even when it feels like everything is fighting against them. That's when leadership, I think, is the hardest. I think that's when just being a person is the hardest, is when everything seems insurmountable, and everything seems against you. You still try and carry on and know that you can have impact. And I am a believer in like small wins. I think a lot of communities and I think a lot of people in general forget to count their small wins, even with this kind of ominous message of like everything's going to go wrong and Moses being like, y'all are going to screw up, and this is not because I told you not to. It's like, not that you were warned. Joshua is still being put in a place of being like, okay, but there's something we can do, and we're going to try. And like, just giving that try is important.
So I want to speak to that and give you the opportunity to speak to something that you wrote to us was really important to you, because I do actually think that your message speaks really loudly to something that is near and dear to your heart, which is your work with First Call. You know, this Kansas City organization dedicated to reducing the impact of alcohol, drugs, and addiction. And generally, you know, when dealing with addiction, people will state, like, it is normal to mess up. Like, people will mess up. They will have bad days. But delineating, or not even bad, I don't want to, you know, bypass that. And that every small win should be counted and celebrated is of mass importance. So I do want to give you the opportunity to speak to that as well.
Yeah, I appreciate it. First Call is an incredible organization here in Kansas City that supports folks who are in the process of finding their way into recovery or in recovery, works with the families of people in recovery from addiction, substance abuse issues. And it's something that's touched my life personally. And it's something, by the way, I don't want to go too deep into this, though I think it's worth going into. Our Jewish community on the whole, both here in Kansas City and nationally, it is something we don't talk about. It is something we kind of hide behind. There's actually the theme of Hester Panim in this Torah portion, the idea of hiding our faces, which like in this case, in the portion is regarding to how God is saying that God will like hide God's self, not to gender God, from the people why these bad things and their things are happening. It's just going to let it happen to them. We tend to hide our faces. about the issue of addiction recovery happening in our communities, and it's happening everywhere. There's amazing organizations like Beit Tshuva, based out of LA and now New York, who are really tackling this. But in communities themselves, we tend not to talk about it. I know that there are people in my community struggling because I know that I am one of the people in my community struggling. And I hate that I have to, like, behind closed doors have the conversations about how do we get people help. And look, there's a reason it's called Alcoholics Anonymous and Narcotics Anonymous. There's an anonymity piece to it. And we need to raise awareness about this issue, especially because we've come as a Jewish community, and really as a larger community, to think about mental health, to think about suicide prevention, to think about all of the different things that people are facing. But this one is still stigmatized in a way that really feels shameful. And I don't think that any community ever should be in a place where they attach shame to something that people are struggling with that is oftentimes out of their control and oftentimes out of their hands. We should be embracing them. That's what it means to go out and do good things to me every single day, is to remember that there are people who are not visible to our community and who are struggling in a way that is not visible to many people, and say, how can we help you too? And so I love doing that on kind of the larger level of our community, but also how we think about it for our local Jewish community. What does it mean to provide space for people to have meetings? What does it mean to talk about it in public spaces and not feel shunned? What would it look like for our community to say, this is what we're going to prioritize this year, right? Every community thinks about the things that are really important to them in the course of a year. It might be the Federation. In smaller communities, it's usually led by like Federation and large organizations. And in bigger communities, it might be on a synagogue by synagogue basis or a school by school basis in the case of Hillel, because Amanda and I both come from the Hillel world also. What does it look like to open our doors and say, we're here to help and we're here to listen and we're here to acknowledge that your experience is a valid one? We're going to validate your experience as people who are both Jewish and people who are struggling, and understand that there's an intersection to those both, because a lot of the language and thinking around recovery, especially in traditional 12 steps program, is very grounded in Christian ideology, which can be really uncomfortable for a lot of people, but also that we're just going to listen and we're just going to show up. And for me, my job here in Kansas City has allowed me to do that both with First Call and then also working with First Call in combination with our community, how we're providing those opportunities for specifically Jewish members of our community. So thank you for letting me wax poetic about why that's an important thing for me personally. And it's really important. And I hope that I always hope when I talk to people about it, that it's the beginning of the conversation, not just the one conversation that people have about it.
So I 100% agree. And I don't know if you, Don, will come off me for this part of the conversation, and you can, or you don't have to, if you don't want to. I know that when Idan, Gabe, and I sat down to talk about what this podcast was going to be, this was actually a huge conversation about drinking and joshing and what that would look like and what we wanted to ensure would happen. So when people listen to our trailer, we actually acknowledge it in our first ever trailer for this podcast, is that we want to be as inclusive as possible, which is why we always have non-alcoholic parallel drinks that are included not only in the podcast, but also on the website, so that people who want to enjoy the mocktail or the parallel drink can actually celebrate in the Parsha creation without necessarily hitting a roadblock. That was an important piece for us. Like, we recognize that we're trying to uplift as many voices and experiences as possible. And I think one place that a lot of us tend to connect is over the struggle, you know, is a place where we find some difficult things. I would argue that mental health is really important. I would agree with you there. I know Idan, anytime he is given an opportunity to answer a question about how we can make our lives slightly better, is like, make sure you're resting, make sure to take a day off, make sure to take a breath, make sure to treat yourself nicely. Like, Idan is very good about being like, do these things. I don't know if he does those things, but he's very good at telling people to do those things. And it does seem like it's kind of one piece at a time. And I have to say, I know that one of your, you said, artistic outlets is that you are a beginning adult fan of Legos. And so I do think that there's something beautiful to this idea of having these on their own kind of sharp-edged pieces that when you put them together create something really interesting and cool and strong and unknown, because people can constantly put those same pieces together in so many different ways. you know, and it's kind of whatever message you're trying to get out there. And Ethan, I know you've listened to these episodes before, so I know you know what question is coming your way. But if you were to have your Lego moment, if you were able to have one message that you wanted your people to hear, that you wanted the listener of this podcast to hear, what would that message be? What would your Lego masterpiece look like?
You give me too much credit as a person who does Lego. And one of my favorite dumb facts is to let people know that the plural of Lego is Lego, which is reminiscent of some things in the Hebrew language. There's some things that are like singular and plural, and also in English in general. Anyways, I've been thinking about this, and I've been thinking about it kind of in the context of the portion and also in the context of podcasting. So one of my favorite podcasts that I've ever listened to is The West Wing Weekly with Josh Molina, another member of the tribe, who they recap every single episode of the show. And every week at the very end of the episode, they quoted a line from the very first episode, from the pilot episode, and they both say, okay, and then they both say together, what's next? And so my message is this, in thinking about Moshe's transition out of leadership and the end of his life, and thinking about Joshua's transition into it, and thinking about this message that everything is going to go wrong no matter what you do, the word okay is really important. I think okay is the word that conveys the most, like, most feelings on the spectrum of emotions that are possible. Like, I say it all the time. You can say okay in a positive way. You can say okay and have to settle. My message is that it's okay to say okay before you think about what's next. I think it's really important that we ground ourselves in that way, especially as we're heading into the new year and thinking about what's come before us and what's coming ahead of us, is to ground yourself by just saying, okay, here I am, what's next?
You know, whenever we're celebrating a new year, there's generally a focus on, yeah, having some l'chaims, right? Being able to bring in drinks for this new year and celebrate. And as always, we'd love to remind you that we always have both an alcoholic version and a non-alcoholic version of our drinks so that everyone can partake in the way that they feel most comfortable. But for me, this week, I feel most comfortable with Idan taking over Midrashic Mixology, which he's about to do right now.
Well, it's Joshy's first day of training, so we're going to start off nice and easy, if not strong and resolute. A classic everyone should know, the dirty martini. Start with a mixing glass with ice, pour in 2.5 ounces of good vodka. We stress good because this is a vodka-forward drink. Break out the good stuff. After all, we are celebrating the appointment of a new leader. Next up, a splash of olive brine for the olives of the Promised Land, into which Joshua will lead the people. I would start with 1/2 ounce, depending on how dirty you like your martinis. Give all that a good stir, but don't chip the ice. We're mixing and we're cooling everything down, not trying to water down our ingredients. Now, Moses is a great leader, strong and resolute, you may say, even with all his faults. Vermouth softens out and sweetens a drink, which is why a dry martini will have less vermouth than a regular one. So, for Moses, put a splash of vermouth into a martini glass. Bonus points if you stick the glass in the freezer for a bit first. Swirl the vermouth around the glass to get that scent and flavor all up the glass. Well, Moses is going to be gone pretty soon, so dump out the vermouth and pour in Joshua's extra dry, dirty martini. Finish it off with a toothpick of olives and a drop of bitters on top for God's ominous warnings. For a non-alcoholic version, replace the vodka with tonic water and swirl your glass with lemon juice for that subtle hint of flavor. A strong, resolute toast for Joshua's impending promotion. Did we say it enough times? L'chaim.
L'chaim, Joshy.
Mazal tov, Josh.
No mezcal for him.
Are we saying, Idan, that we should make it a triple?
Only if we want it to be canonically correct.
So, not to water down the magic of, you know, Midrashic mixology, but I do have to say we've made it to our last section, our thank yous and closing cues. And so Ethan and Idan and Vayelech, we understand that endings can be a scary thing. Transition's hard. And especially since we're ending a year and starting a new one, we might have some trepidation as, you know, we find ourselves in the midst of the days of awe. What advice might you have for facing an ending, even when you might not be quite ready for it? Ethan, we'll start with you.
I think it's just really important to ground yourself in the moment and stay in the moment. And think about how you can go out and do good things and think about what's next.
Beautiful. Edan.
A new beginning can be very tough, and especially when it's unfamiliar, sort of uncharted territory. So sometimes you might be able to take some things, to be able to take some things with you from before the ending ends to start your new start.
So I'm pretty sure that I've brought up Semisonic before on this podcast, but I'll do it again because I can, and you know, it's my podcast and no one's going to stop me except maybe the editors if they delete this part. But Semisonic, in their extraordinary song, Closing Time, say that every new beginning comes from some other beginning's end. And last week we talked about stories and we also talked about choice and power. And this week, Ethan's saying, hey, we have this power and we have these choices, and now with that is going to come some change. And so I think if we're willing to reframe our endings as new beginnings, then that actually gives us a lot of power for how we want to tell our stories and how we want them to kind of pan out. I think that can be really exciting in some ways and really daunting in others, say if you don't like getting on the mic for a podcast every week. But generally, it's kind of a gift to be able to every now and then be able to say like, hey, this thing is coming to an end, but that means something new is starting. And I don't know what that's going to look like, but I do know that I'm going to be a part of it. And so I want to choose how I'm going to tell this story and how I want it to come out in the end. You know, all of these are conversations that people can have with each other and share with each other, especially as we're going through these days of awe. We're supposed to be conversing with each other and, you know, making teshuvah, which some people say is repentance, but I would actually say is also choosing a direction that you want to go to, right? Turning in a way that means something to you. And so be in conversation. And Ethan, if people want to continue the conversation with you, how can they best find or follow you and tell you how cool you are?
I've never been cool, but I appreciate the shout out. People can email me. My email is ethanh@thejkc.org, or I'm out there on Facebook as well. You can certainly send me a message and I'd love to chat.
Incredible. And you know, I got to ask it, Ethan, you have any last words, thoughts, concerns, or jokes?
I just think it's really important that everybody listening this week knows that while this was written by Gabe, it was delivered by Edan.
Incredible. Beautifully said. Thank you so much, Ethan, for being such an incredible guest and really sharing so much of yourself and your insights into a small chapter of Torah that has a lot of meaning and depth to it. Thank you to Edan for taking on, per usual, more than his share of this podcast partnership. Thank you to Gabe, who genuinely wrote the rundown and Midrashic mixology while on a train, because he is awesome. Thank you to all of our listeners for being extraordinary. We're so lucky to have you and enter this new year and soon a new season. Get excited with all of you. But for now, stay tuned. Our conclusion's coming at you soon. Edan, I think one of the most amazing things that we don't get to think about all the time these days is this huge subsection of people that just don't belong to organized Jewish communities. I mean, that's partially why we started this podcast in the first place, was that we felt like there was a huge group of people that could take ownership of their Judaism in their own terms and their own time that maybe weren't interested at doing it at the, you know, cost of a synagogue membership.
Yeah, it's weird. I mean, I know that I haven't been a member of a synagogue personally for a long time, probably since I moved out to go to college. But that hasn't stopped me from doing Jewish things or even going to synagogue. I mean, I said before on the podcast that I find the way I sort of have my prayerful Jewish experience is by assisting other Jewish people and things in doing their Jewish things, if that makes sense. So, right, producing this podcast, helping people, quote unquote, attend services at a synagogue via live stream, and help people in person experience the prayer service in a positive and spiritual way. Yeah, you don't necessarily need to have a membership at a synagogue to experience Judaism, to live Judaism.
And I think one of the things that I really appreciate about Ethan's Do Good Things is that's really meaningful and kind of simple for us to take on as our own, right? Like, even if we're going through change, and I know that in this podcast, we go through change all the time. Things happen, maybe one of us or two of us or three of us can't make an episode. And every week we have a new adventure and there's kind of a new change or a new challenge. But trying to do good things, that just seems like something that's tangible. It seems like something that we can actually touch and really aim for in this new year.
Doing something good is always within reach, I think. To not make it sound too overly poetic, but it just depends on which way you reach and how far you reach, right? How far are you willing to go to do something good? And not everything good that can be done takes a ton of reach, a ton of effort. But in really every scenario, there's always good to be done.
Absolutely. And I know that you were like, not to get too poetic about it, which I appreciate, because that doesn't come into, you know, until next week's episode, Edan, and we don't want to get too ahead of ourselves. But generally speaking, change is difficult. Starting over is hard. Doing good can be a challenge, but can be really rewarding. And so I think there's a lot that even this short chapter has to teach us. And there was so much that Ethan brought to the table about the fact that we have people in our communities who might be struggling. We have people in our communities who are truly giving it their all. We have people in our communities that are finding creative outlets and ways to express their Judaism or their, you know, ability to contribute to our world as we understand it. And I just think that's really incredible, you know, and I got it that the plural of Lego is not Legos. It is Lego. I've learned that's fine. But in creating kind of a Lego masterpiece, as I said before, everybody has their own view and their own ability to take all these pieces and build what they want into a strong kind of extraordinary structure. And we try to do that every week on this podcast. Sometimes we're more successful some weeks than others. It just depends how tired we might be that week. But for this one, I feel like we really touched a major point, which is there's a lot out there that requires us to be in the moment and ready to take on leadership opportunities in the midst of major changes. We're here with you through a lot of those changes. We're looking forward to a new season starting soon, which will happen, you know, around or right after Simchat Torah. We know that the next few weeks are going to be a lot. Some people might say they're awesome. Some people might say that they're awful. But we're here with you through it. We're really excited to start this new year with you and for you. And of course, we raise our glass to you and to 5783. L'chaim and Mazel Tov, Joshi.
Hi, I'm Ethan Helfand, and you're listening to Drinking and Droshing, Torah with a Twist. And, okay.
What's next?